茶屋茶屋宗マハムナエソハ茶屋茶屋宗マハムナエソハ茶And now the Medicine Buddha stanza and seven recitations of the mantra. Bhagawan with equal compassion for all, whose name when merely heard dispels the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha lapis light. Jaya cha om bekanse bekanse maha bekanse bekanse Rajasamugate soha Jayata om bekanse bekanse Maha bekanse bekanse Rajasamugate soha Jayata om bekanse bekanse Maha bekanse bekanse Rajasamugate soha Tayata om bekanse bekanse Maha bekanse bekanse Raja samugate soha Tayata om bekanse bekanse Maha bekanse bekanse Raja samugate soha Tayata om bekanse bekanse Maha bekanse bekanse Raja samugate soha Tayata om bekanse bekanse Maha bekanse bekanse Raja samugate soha Now we'll say the four immeasurables in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now we'll flip to page 37, and we'll chant the four immeasurables once in Tibetan, and then Tenrezig's mantra 8 times, and the Green Taro mantra 7 times. Sam Chen Tom Che De Wa Jung De Wei Gyu Jung Den Pa Gyu Shik Du Wei
Padme Hum, Om Mani.
Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re So Ha. 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 And the children are free to go to their classes now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So thank you, Donna. Welcome to Kadampa Center, everyone. As most people know, I'm not Geshe Gelug. He's under the weather this morning. If you're disappointed that there's not someone with a shaved head and red robes sitting up here, you're welcome to leave. No offense taken.
I got some clippers in
there. Oh, no. Thank you. So, my name is Robbie Watkins. I've been a member of Kadampa Center since the early 90s, so I'm glad to have everyone here. And I think we'll start off with announcements rather than leaving those for the end. We'll give those now. I know Donna has a few things to mention.
Yes, just a couple things. One is very exciting. Next Saturday, we're going to do another Tara mini retreat. We've done quite a few in the past year, and this time at Geshe-la's recommendation, we're going to do it more traditional style. What you would do if you were doing a retreat at home, which is we're going to be starting at 6:15 in the morning before sunup, and we'll have a session and then a break for breakfast, a session and then lunch, and then a session and then a break and then a session. And so it's going to last until after sundown. We did this in winter because it's a shorter day. Mm-hmm. So please come. We've already had a few people register for it, and it's really, you know, a wonderful experience. Geshe-la will be here. And if you can't quite stretch to doing the full day, you certainly can come, come and go as you wish to during the day. But I do encourage you to come and try that experience if you can. And then in 3 weeks, on the weekend of January 31st and then the first 2 days of February, Venerable Amy Miller is going to be back. It's turning into an annual visit right around this time of the year. And she's going to be doing a workshop on the Path to Joy. She'll be drawing from the Lam Rim and from the wonderful book by His Holiness and Archbishop Desmond Tutu, which was the Book of Joy. So please do come for those events, and we'll look forward to seeing you then. And it looks like Elise has something to say.
Yeah, I just want to add that Venerable Amy Miller is a very qualified teacher. She's been a nun for a number of years, and she's one of those people that if we weren't part of the FPMT, this worldwide organization led by Lama Zopa, we wouldn't have access to wonderful teachers like her. She comes here because we're an FPMT center, so it's always something to remember. And she's very qualified, so highly recommended. Let's see, Sandy?
She also wrote the book on Buddhism in a Nutshell, which is the course that we use here.
Yeah.
She's the one that helped to establish that entire course that we use here as a basis
for
our classes.
Yeah, so we can really rejoice that she's got a connection with Kadampa Center and comes back here regularly. Elise.
And on top of it all, she's a wonderful person. She's someone you'd really like to meet. Well, I'm here to remind you all that we've started a food drive. During the holidays, there's lots of people thinking about giving food for Thanksgiving and Christmas. But after the holidays, people are still hungry and less is coming in. So we're making an effort to collect food. Any kind of non-perishable food, no glass containers, please, because those are a little dangerous in transport. But we also welcome pet food, because some people give up their own meals to feed their pets, because we all know that pets are really important to people. The other thing, that's going to be running through Valentine's Day. On Valentine's Day, we're going to have our grand total of everything that's been collected to date. The other event I want to let you know about is an interfaith, the Interfaith Care of Creation is a coalition of over 40 churches, places of worship, whatever, that are concerned about the environment, that how our faith or our beliefs have an effect in how we take care of and view our environment. And I know a lot of you are concerned about that as well. And on Tuesday, January 21st in the evening, there's an event that's going to be held at Highland United Methodist Church about global warming. This presentation is based on an internationally renowned program called Pachamama and Operation Drawdown, and it's very informative, very interesting and hopeful and helpful. So I would encourage you to attend this if you have any interest in availability. One of these flyers is by the back door. You could take a picture of it for more information. Thank you.
Thank you, Elise. Any other announcements? Okay. Just so I can get an idea who's here. Who do we have who's here for the very first time today? Okay, a couple people. Glad to have you here. Let's just take a couple minutes and introduce yourself to people who are sitting around you or people in the center. Just say hello, and we'll take a few minutes to do that. Okay, let's come back to our seats. Okay. So we'll begin with a little bit of meditation. And if you're new, there's nothing mystical or strange about meditation. It's just becoming familiar with your own mind, which can become a which can be a scary process, but we begin by establishing our posture. If we're sitting in a chair, our back, whether we're sitting in a chair or on the floor, our back is a little bit straighter than we normally sit, not rigid, but a little bit regal, it's said sometimes, the back is straight. Our head is straight on our shoulders, not tilted one way or the other. Maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical, but not with our chin on our chest. Our eyes are lightly closed or very slightly open. Either is fine. our shoulders are relaxed, down, not up around our neck, a little bit back so our chest is open, our mouth is lightly closed, not clenched, our upper arms are away from the sides of our body, and traditionally we place our hands in our lap, the right hand on the lap, the right hand on the left, with the thumbs touching, representing the union of wisdom and compassion. If we're sitting on a cushion, our legs are in a posture that we find comfortable. It's good to sit a little bit to the front of the cushion so that our pelvis is opened up. If we're in a chair, our feet are flat on the floor. Or if we want to put a cushion under our feet, that's fine. So take a minute and examine your posture. Identify any sources of stress or tension and kind of relax those. The point of the posture is not to be rigid or tight, but to be stable and self-maintaining, so that during the meditation that follows, we really don't need to pay attention to it. So having established our posture, we'll begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen so that the stomach expands on the in-breath and contracts on the out-breath. So our diaphragm is really being pulled down. Three really deep breaths. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And as always, we begin by setting our motivation. And any motivation for being here and doing this meditation is a good one. If we just came out of curiosity, that's fine. If we came for a little bit of peace and quiet, that's great. But it says that the most powerful motivation, the one that gives the most energy to our meditation, is what's called the bodhicitta motivation. And that is specifically the wish to become enlightened, to develop our mind, so that we can be of greater benefit to others. So we can think, I am doing this meditation to develop my mind and its positive qualities so that I can be of benefit to others. And that's not necessarily the way we usually think. It's a little bit awkward a lot of times, but that's okay. But even if we can grit our teeth and force that motivation out, it's said to be incredibly beneficial. So let's just take a moment and generate the bodhicitta motivation. And having set our motivation, we'll now begin the actual meditation, which is a simple breathing meditation. We place our mind on the movement of the breath in and out through our nostrils. Mind on the breath. Nothing more, nothing less than that. And every time we notice our mind has moved to another object, we gently let go of that and bring it back to the breath, over and over and over again. Just mind directly perceiving the movement of the breath. Nothing more, nothing less than that. So we'll do that for about 10 minutes. Maybe a little bit of stretch, but that's okay. Be gentle with yourself. Understand that this is not what you usually do with your free time. That our mind's ability to stay on one object, for most of us, is pretty weak. But this is the way we develop that. Mind on the breath. And as we begin our meditation by setting our motivation, we can end it with a dedication. We can acknowledge that we've done something positive, that we've created a positive imprint in our mind stream, and we think, may that imprint not be wasted, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all sentient beings. I think we have some very serious meditators here this morning. Want to go for another 50 minutes? Everybody seemed quite quiet during that time. Yeah, so thank you. Could I get the whiteboard to write on? The stand-up one. Thank you. I didn't get any guidance on what I was supposed to be talking about this morning. I could just do an introduction and say, we'll let David Strievel take over. But that's not what Gishola said. So I was going to follow up on our New Year's Eve purification practice and talk a little bit about purification. Am I on here? Okay, thank you. I think that's a good topic to get clear on at the beginning of the year, as we start the year. How many people were here on New Year's Eve? Yeah, quite a few. So we do a very traditional purification practice on New Year's Eve called Dorji Kadro. But I think it's important to, as card-carrying Buddhists or people who are interested maybe in Buddhist philosophy, to understand exactly what we're talking about when we talk about purification. Let's see, I'm waiting for a board to come on. I like to write while I'm talking.
We're all bored waiting for you.
Hmm? You're on board for me waiting for the board? Thank you, Chris. We have a team working on it out there, I can see. So purification, anyway, is a huge part of Buddhist practice. So we're, all our teachers instruct us that we should, if we understand it correctly, we'd be doing purification practices nonstop. Not that most of us are. Thank you. Here they come. Oh, great. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. Can I lock the wheel so it doesn't roll? Yeah, here it is. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, David. Thank you, Sandy. Yeah. Purification. Okay, so purification is based on two basic concepts. If we understand these concepts, we're very motivated to purify. The first is an understanding of karma. And this is a discussion, okay? So who's going to be monitoring the mic? Yeah, people don't, thank you, Susie. So if people have anything to say, please talk into the mic, because there are thousands of people around the world listening to us. We're being broadcast. How many do we have out there, Chris?
There's almost 12.
Almost 12. Okay, great. So if you have, anyway, it's a discussion. So if you all have nothing to contribute, we'll just all leave. Yeah, we'll be finished. So purification is based on an understanding of karma. Who can tell us what karma is? Anybody? Action. Okay. That's an easy answer. What is it? Give me more than that. More than just action. What is it? What's it mean?
Like
What's an action? Yeah. Okay, David. Thank you.
I think it means that the actions we take now are building our whole future. I guess the complete Buddhist thought is not only in this lifetime and the next one, but the next one too. And therefore, you know, we should carefully monitor what it is we're thinking and doing, because we're building our future a little bit at a time.
Exactly. Okay. So we're talking about actions. We're talking about actions of body, anything we do physically, speech, anything we say, and mind, anything we think. Those are all actions. And every one of those, without exception, makes an imprint on our mind stream, on our consciousness. Everything we do physically, everything we say, everything we think makes an imprint on that mind stream that we will inevitably experience in the future. So our future experience is being determined by our actions in the present of body, speech, and mind. Okay? So who here has nothing but virtuous actions imprinted on their mind stream just from this lifetime? Who's been good their entire life? Raise your hands, please. Okay. Who in this lifetime has done things, said things, thought things that they regret? Oh boy. Okay. We need to do some purification. Who here feels guilty about those things? Okay, if you feel guilty, you're not a Buddhist. You have to leave, okay? I mean, Geshe Gelug, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, they tell us that Tibetans don't understand this idea of guilt, okay? Apparently, that's a Western thing. But I think it's important to get clear on the difference. Regret is wishing that we hadn't done them, because they know that these actions cause problems, okay? Guilt, I think, is going to the next degree, saying, I'm a bad person because I did these things, or I'm permanently stained or judged or whatever because of these actions. And there's a very big difference between the two. I think am I still coming across? So yeah. This thing is moving. Yeah, I'm not hearing it myself. Okay. Regret is actually, in the Buddhist philosophy, considered to be a positive mental state. Regretting that you've done negative actions is considered to be positive, okay, because that motivates you not to do them. Guilt is considered to be basically very non-productive, and something that should be abandoned completely. Okay? So there's a big difference between regret. I wish I hadn't done these things because I know they're going to cause problems for me in the future and problems for others, and guilt, saying that I'm a bad person for having done these things. So we're not talking about developing guilt or feeling bad. We're talking about regretting negative actions of body, speech, and mind that we've done in the past. Any comments or questions about that so far? You know, I like to cook, so I'm in the kitchen using a knife a lot of times. Boom, 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 boom. And inevitably you're going to cut your finger, okay? And your immediate reaction is to grab that finger and say, ooh, I wish I hadn't done that. That's regret. Okay? I wish I hadn't done that because that's going to cause problems. Okay, that's going to be a pain. But there's no sense of guilt. Not that I'm a bad person for having cut my finger. It's just regret. I wish I hadn't done that. Okay? So we're talking about the difference between regret and then guilt. We're not talking about guilt here, okay? And if we have a Buddhist understanding of previous lifetimes, we can understand that we have done these actions of body, speech, and mind that we regret countless times in the past, whether or not we remember them. But just we can assume logically that we've created a tremendous amount of negative karma that's imprinted on our mind stream that will inevitably cause us to suffer in the future. Negative actions of body, speech, and mind cause us to suffer. They may cause others to suffer, but it's inevitable that they will cause ourselves to suffer. What do we mean when we're talking about negative actions? Can anybody explain that to me? What kind of actions cause negative karma? Susie?
Anything that causes suffering.
Yeah, but that's kind of a tautology. So can you be a little bit clearer on that? I mean, they will cause suffering, but what are their motivations? Negative actions are motivated by?
Negative ideas.
Yeah, basically anger, attachment, and ignorance. Yeah, so yeah, you're right on it. Okay, so we can get into long lists. There are long lists of negative actions. Killing, stealing, lying, sexual misconduct. Okay, harsh speech, frivolous speech. You know, there's a whole list of them. But they're actions motivated by attachment, ill will, and ignorance. Okay? Those are negative actions. Okay? They're not motivated by compassion, patience, love, kindness, and so on. So these are actions that when we do them, they may hurt others, but they inevitably will, in the future, hurt ourselves. Okay? Cause us to suffer in the future. So this is really depressing. This is a bummer. This is how negative Buddhism is. You know, we're supposed to sit here and think about, we've had countless previous lifetimes, we've done all these negative actions, all these bad things, and they're just going to cause me to suffer. Okay. So, but we also have an understanding of what we frequently talk about, emptiness. And this is a huge area of Buddhist studies, and it's very philosophical, it's very confusing, and gets very technical, but In this situation we're talking about, we understand that we've done these things, but they are not permanent. They are not stuck there on our mind stream. Okay? They are not self-inherently existent. They are empty of that kind of existence. So this is a lot of verbiage, but what we're saying is actually those imprints on our mind stream can be removed. This is what Geshe Gelug says over and over. The one good thing about negative actions, the one good quality they have is that they can be purified. Okay, by doing purification practice, we can diminish the strength of those negative imprints on our mind stream, negative actions of body, speech, and mind, we can weaken them. And if they're done ultimately with a true understanding of emptiness, they can be completely removed. They can be totally removed from our mind stream so they no longer exist. If they're done with an understanding that they lack inherent existence, they can be removed. Not just diminished, but completely removed. So, when we talk about purification practice, we're talking about the mind's ability to purify itself. It's the mind working on the mind. It's a very psychological process. There's nothing mystical or, you know, angels coming in to clean our minds or running our mind. It's more the mind is working with itself to purify itself, to remove, to diminish or actually remove those negative imprints. And this is something, to be honest, we have to kind of take on faith. You know, this is what our teachers tell us. This is what we read about in the text. Until we start to experience it, it does involve a certain amount of faith. But I think it makes sense when we look at the actual practice from a psychological point of view. How many people here are or have been Catholics? Okay, quite a few. I was not a Catholic, but I think confession is a similar sort of process in a lot of ways. I think dealing with the psychology of these imprints of actions on our mind stream that we regret having done, it's a similar sort of process. Any comments or questions so far?
Yeah.
Okay. Mike over here.
So what exactly is emptiness? Because I don't...
let's see. Yeah, do we have 20 hours? Yeah.
That's very simple.
Emptiness refers to the fact... It's a jargony term. It's kind of hard to understand. It refers to the fact that everything, physical objects, mental emotions, karma, even enlightenment, is empty of permanent or inherent existence. Nothing exists in a fixed sort of way. Everything is, as Lama Zopa says, is almost like a dream. That's the way they exist. They are empty of the way we usually think of them. We think, I've been a bad person, I was mean to my mother, that's on my mind, that's stuck there, it's always going to be there. Okay? And the Buddhist point of view is, no, it's not always going to be there. It can be removed because it is empty of permanence.
In other words, everything changes.
Yes.
That's change.
That's not the exact same thing, but it's a very important part of it. Everything is always changing. Even things we think are fixed, solid. I am this kind of person. I have done these bad things. That's always changing.
That's a good point.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's what we call as impermanence.
Mm-hmm.
Not that things go out of existence, but they are everything. Every phenomena, there are only a couple of exceptions, but everything is always changing.
So this is basically, this applies particularly, let's say, to somebody who has been a criminal all his life.
Yeah, sure.
And
then
all of a sudden realizes that this is not the way to go.
Yeah.
We do things, and so...
Yeah.
Purify.
We've all done negative actions that we regret, but none of that is fixed. It's always changing. We've all done those criminal actions in previous lifetimes, if we believe in that. Yeah, we've all been there and done that.
Okay, very good. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah,
now
good question.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, over here.
While the mic's moving.
Yeah, Chris.
I've always thought of impermanence and emptiness as two separate distinct things, but the thing I learned today, or think I'm understanding more, is they're much closer.
Yeah.
And I always thought that emptiness was the way you think about things, and impermanence was the physical state of something. But that doesn't make any sense either.
Yeah, it's not a physical thing.
Right.
But impermanence, an understanding of impermanence, leads us towards an understanding of emptiness. Yeah.
Right.
A lot of people think they're the same. Some people think they're the same thing, and they're not. Okay. But an understanding of impermanence, you know, comes very early in the Lam Rim. You know, it's a very early teaching. Emptiness comes at the end. If we're, you know, looking at the official Buddhist scholarly approach,
right.
First we get an understanding of everything's always changing, okay? And if we realize that, that leads to an understanding of emptiness eventually.
Right. For example, what I thought, like that red flag up there, which isn't, no, you're looking the wrong way, towards me. Up, right, the red prayer flag.
That one there, okay.
That particular one, okay. I always thought that is always falling apart.
Yeah.
You can see the threads falling apart, always. That's impermanence. But the way I think that there's really a red permanent, see right there, that's the link that I was
yeah.
asking before.
Yeah, you think
there's a red permanent flagness about that piece of red cloth.
Yeah.
That's emptiness, the way I think. But the thing I got today is they're much closer than that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So
seeing the emptiness of the red flag is basically meaningless.
Right.
Is worthless. Okay.
Right.
But when you start to apply it to your own mind, your actions, your
right.
feelings, emotions, then it becomes
and that's the basis for purification. While purification is possible, am I seeing
yes.
that?
Yes. Right. Yes. Purification, we'll talk about a little bit, would be impossible.
Right. Unless things changed and that they were
yeah,
permanent.
If things were
right.
permanent. Yeah. If something was permanent, if it's permanently stuck on our mind stream, we couldn't do anything about it. So an understanding of the emptiness of these things is what makes purification possible. Chris is having realizations as we speak, yes?
Well, I got to tell a Chris joke now. It's like, if it was permanent, you couldn't do it because it would have already existed.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I picture Zen when I, never mind. Go
yeah.
on, Robbie, you're doing a good
it
job.
It would have always existed and will always exist in the future.
Right, yeah. Like,
it'd be just like the monolith in 2001 or something.
Right. I heard this cone once, or whatever they're called. Something that's in... Never mind, I forget it now. No wonder I'm here learning. Okay, go on.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so since we're talking about emptiness, and this is such a hot topic for me.
Yeah.
In the Confession of the 35 Buddhas, this practice,
yeah.
which is a purification practice...
I've really opened a can of worms here.
At the end of it. Well, I mean, it's very... important to try and understand this.
Yes, it is.
We're doing
yeah.
this practice all the time and trying to understand what it means. So at the end of it, it says, there's this paragraph, and I read this a lot, and I don't totally understand it. It says, then reflect after you do all your purification practice, and you regret, and you generate your regret. Then it says, then reflect on the emptiness of each of these negative actions, remembering that even negative actions do not truly exist from their own side. They arise in dependence on causes and conditions and are merely labeled by mind. You can either think they are completely non-existent from their own side, or that they are merely labeled by mind, or that they are hallucination. Whichever method you use to understand emptiness, the conclusion that should come in your heart is that each of these negative actions are completely empty, not existing from their own side, even the slightest atom. So when I read that, a couple of things occur to me as ways to approach this idea of emptiness mm-hmm. that I've not yet fully realized, and mm-hmm. so I'm trying to
yeah.
to practice anyway without having realized it. And one is to say, okay, these actions of mine are just labeled by mind. So, like, I may feel really terrible about something I did or really regret something I did, but perhaps in my ignorance I don't understand that it wasn't really a bad thing. I've labeled it
yes,
as a bad thing.
Exactly.
I think of it as a bad thing. Maybe it was a good thing because I can't see the entire scope of lifetime after lifetime and understand that maybe this was a necessary thing to have had happened. And because of my ignorance of all of that,
mm-hmm.
I'm labeling it in a way that maybe isn't true.
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, that's a positive way to think, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the other thing I think is this idea, they are hallucination. Then that kind of gets into the more woo kind of thing where I'm thinking everything's just this dream that we have to awaken from. Like we're really not seeing reality. We're
mm-hmm.
really projecting our own thoughts and ideas onto everything we see all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I start to get into this idea that the things I did, you know, just really I don't have to worry about any of them, which maybe is going too far.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's going into what is referred to as nihilism.
Right. But it says complete hallucination. So I struggle with that idea of complete hallucination, because if it's a complete hallucination, then, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's not really real at all. And that's where I kind of get stuck.
The hallucination, I think, is that things exist the way you think they do. You think they're permanent and have a solid existence. That's the hallucination. This is not saying that things don't exist at all. The hallucination is that they exist the way we think they do. Okay? So, yes, there are other people. Yes, they're suffering. Yes, my actions have an effect on them. It's not denying any of that. But the solidity, the permanence of that is the hallucination. You know? So on one extreme, what we call realism or materialism, we think things exist permanently from their own side. The other extreme, we think they don't exist at all. According to the Buddha, reality is somewhere in the middle between those two extremes. Okay, permanence on one side, nihilism on the other. Things do exist, but they don't exist the way we think they do. But those are good questions, yeah. Yeah, that's a great passage, yeah. So thank you for bringing that up.
So I have another question.
Okay. Susie, you're getting a workout. You're going from one side to the other. If anybody on this side has a comment, make it after this one, yeah.
So I have a case scenario here that I don't seem to understand how to get out of it. And it has really in relationship to karma and action.
Mm-hmm.
Some time ago, I had a cat, a beloved cat.
Mm-hmm.
And when I took him to the vet, the doctor said that he had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
He could not move part of his body. But the doctor said he is not in pain.
Mm-hmm.
He was eating. He was doing things fine. But in my mind, I said to myself, if I had this problem, I would be miserable. It would be horrendous for me if I had his problem. So I decided that the best thing for him was to be euthanized.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, years later, now I have a cat who has cancer and has had breast cancer for 3 years. But she is eating, she's also having a similar problem as the other cat.
Mm-hmm.
But then it dawned on me. She is not ready to go to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have, she's eating very well now. She recovered from what she had, you know, part of the cancer issues that she has. And she's going. But then it dawned on me. I made a mistake with Napoleon. That was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And so although I don't feel guilty because I did it with my heart,
mm-hmm.
trying to prevent him from what I thought was suffering,
mm-hmm.
I realize now that he was not really in suffering.
Mm-hmm.
The mental, it was a hallucination of mine.
Mm-hmm.
So now I cannot get rid of the thought that although I don't feel guilty because I know how my intentions were good, I made a horrible mistake of taking his life. How do I...
So you regret. Yeah, regret.
So it's an extreme...
Not guilt, but regret.
Exactly, but it's an extreme regret.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't... I think of this often.
Yeah.
And I cannot get rid of it. Even though I don't feel the guilt, I feel the regret.
Yeah, regret, not guilt. So that's a perfect case where you could do some purification practice. Yeah.
So...
To lessen the imprint of that action on your mind stream. Anyone have any comments? Yeah, anybody else? Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example of regret. Yeah.
How do I do this?
So how do you do it? Okay. Yeah. That's what we were supposed to be talking about today. How do we do purification practice?
And there's a lady who wants to talk.
Yeah. No, go ahead. No, go ahead. Yeah, please.
I was more along the lines wanting to ask a question. Now we're talking about, you know, impermanence and emptiness.
Yeah.
So many of us have been here on this earth for many years now, and you have family members that will tell you you've done something when you were a kid. But what happens to those imprints of things that you no longer remember if you take emptiness into...
Yeah.
If you take emptiness into account, does that mean that it is no longer impermanent, therefore it doesn't have any karmic imprint because you can no longer remember it?
No, the thing, even if we don't remember it, it's there, yeah.
So that how imprint do we purify things that we
okay.
no longer can remember exist?
Yeah. How do we purify things that we remember and regret? How do we purify things that we don't remember, okay? So... Here's the recipe, okay? There, to do a complete purification practice, ATB, according to the Buddha, first we start with, what's the first part?
Refuge,
okay? We go for refuge. And if we're card-carrying Buddhists, we take refuge in the historical Buddha. The figure, the historical person who was a human being and achieved enlightenment in one lifetime, the Buddha, the Dharma, which is the teachings that the historical Buddha gave us, and then the Sangha, which we can refer to as other people who are following that path. So refuge means acknowledging this is what I turn to when things are tough. This is my source of spiritual guidance. Okay? So the first thing in a formal purification practice is taking refuge. If we're not Buddhists, we could take refuge in Jesus or Muhammad or whatever. But if we're Buddhists, we take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We start by acknowledging our sources of spiritual strength. Okay? Part two, what's the second part of a purification practice?
Regret.
And as we talked about, it's not, as you explained so clearly, it's not guilt, but we just acknowledge that we've done things that we remember in this lifetime that we wish we hadn't done, or we can assume, based on what other people have told us, we've done things when we were kids that we don't remember, but we would rather not have done. And then if we have a concept of previous lifetimes, we can assume that in countless previous lifetimes, we've done things that we regret. Okay? Not guilt. Okay? But regret. I wish I hadn't done this because it's going to cause problems. Okay? A profound sense of regret. Okay, and when we're doing a specific purification practice like Dorji Kadra on New Year's Eve, we can bring to mind specific things in this lifetime that we remember, saying, I regret having done this. Or we can assume that we've done similar actions that we don't remember or in previous lifetimes. So, a real sense of regret without feeling guilt. What's the third part of a complete purification practice?
Remedy.
The remedy. Okay. So, if I've said something really nasty to one of my coworkers, is the remedy to go and sit on my cushion and meditate about emptiness?
No.
The remedy is to go and apologize to that person. Okay? Geshe Gelug always says this, you get up where you fall down. Okay? If you can do something about it in this lifetime,
go ahead and do it. Just sitting on your cushion doing a bunch of mantras is not adequate, okay? But if you're talking about things that you've done in the past, or thinking about things you've done in the past or in previous lifetimes, where there's no possibility of clearing the situation up, of improving things, the remedy may be saying mantras, okay, making offerings. It may be, you know, doing Dorji Kadro. There are all sorts, there are countless remedies, countless purification practices that the Buddha has given us. But it's typically something that you do with a great sense of this is beneficial, okay? It shouldn't be just kind of rote. But when we do Vajrasattva, which is a major purification practice in our tradition, let's see, that's not in the Gold Prayer Book, is it?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Let's see, yeah. But that involves a meditation, a visual... Page 64 in the Gold Prayer Book. Thank you, Chris. If you look in the Gold Prayer Book, yeah, there's the Vajrasattva mantra, which is 100 syllables, which is one that in the Galupa tradition that we're part of is very much encouraged to do. That's a purification remedy, reciting that mantra with the visualization of Vajrasattva. And then the fourth part is the resolve. Thank you, Elise. And this means pledging, I am never going to say anything mean to anybody as long as I live. No, it doesn't mean that, okay? You know, it has to be, to add another R, it has to be realistic. Okay. So, if we're purifying, having been mean to someone, we can make a resolve, I'm not going to be mean to that person for a week. Okay? I'm not going to be mean to that person for the next 24 hours. Okay? Or I'm not going to think angry thoughts for the next 30 minutes. I mean, it involves being realistic with the understanding that even with those kind of resolves, we'll probably break them. Okay? Which is okay because it, but the power of making that resolve and trying to keep it is incredibly beneficial. Okay? So you start taking refuge, generate a sense of regret, we do the remedy, and then we end with resolve. So that's what we call a formal purification practice, the ones that are given to us by our teachers like Geshe Gelug and His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Purification practice has all those components in it. Sandy, yeah.
And one thing that Venerable Amy taught me in one of the classes that she was in, that she always adds the number 5, which is rejoicing.
Okay.
So
good.
It kind of seals it and brings it around and makes it to where it's something that
right.
If you see the benefit to it, you'll use it more and you'll do it again.
Yes. Acknowledge that you've done something beneficial, yeah, and rejoice. That's very important. Thank you. Yeah.
But there's a problem, though.
There's a problem, okay? Yeah. This is a little book on Vajrasattva practice that we have outside, but this is a formal purification practice.
But there's a problem. The problem is this. What's that going to do to my cat that died?
It does nothing for your cat.
And that's the problem.
You're working. No, we're working with your mind.
Huh?
Your mind is the problem. The dead cat is not the problem. Right?
I don't know.
We don't know, yeah. We can't, again, you have no ability to change the cat, okay? You're working with your mind. This is the mind working with itself, okay?
It's like what I feel is that if my
this
mind...
This does not change what's happened. It does. If I'm trying to purify all the mean things I said to my coworker, it doesn't mean that those don't exist. I'm working on the imprints that is placed on my mind stream.
Because if you do, I'm sorry, I have to get this thing out of my brain.
Yeah.
Because if you, you know, if you have been bad to your mother or to whomever, mm-hmm. and you apologize, yeah. at least the person is feeling, okay, so, you know, it feels better because that person has harmed you, has apologized to you.
Right.
But in my case, it may sound funny, but it's not funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because I realize as I see my cat today how happy she is in spite of the fact that she has cancer, you know, and the other one wasn't even half as bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I took his life.
Yeah.
And so this is something that I don't seem to be able to resolve in my mind because I have made a horrible mistake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you cannot change that, okay? Okay, all you can do is work on the imprints that's made on your mind. Yeah, which is tough, yeah. I think Elise wants to speak to this.
Yeah, one of the ways that I think about it, and I may be incorrect, but it helps me, just as apologizing to someone that you have said something bad to helps not only yourself, your mind, it, as you said, it helps that other person because somehow you're delivering to them some positive energy, right? Through the apology?
Yeah.
If, as a Buddhist, if we believe that consciousness continues past this physical life, like your cat's consciousness continued past the physical life he had, then I believe that if we send, positive thoughts, essentially an apology, positive things,
right.
directed toward that continued consciousness. It's helping that continued consciousness in the same way that you help somebody that you apologize to.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, mm-hmm. I do believe that. Also, now I'm thinking as we're talking about this, because of what happened to my other cat, I was able to save this other cat.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to think it twice. And I said, I'm not going to make the same mistake again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is not a coincidence that she has this problem. So I appreciate that. But actually, I have done the prayer and apologized to my cat, that consciousness that you were taking, you were talking about. It's just only that I thought that maybe there was something more.
No.
To do.
Yeah.
But I guess that this is it.
Yeah.
I can't bring my cat to that. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
I think we had it right here, Chris. Yeah.
And that was the only point I was going to make is that, yeah, we can't, of course we can't change the past, but I think that's kind of the nature of these patterns within ourselves that if you don't recognize them, then you don't purify them. Maybe you would have euthanized a second cat, and maybe that same pattern would manifest in worse ways later on in your life and later on in future lifetimes.
Thank you. Susie, thank
very,
you.
Very quickly.
Thank you.
Now what did I want to say? I think of it also as perhaps we will meet again in another life, and things will work through that way. You know, you can have intention, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something else that, oh well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we have karma. You know, you have very strong karma with these cats. You will meet them again. Maybe not as cats, but... You know, everybody that that's a strong karmic connection, whether it's positive or negative. So you will meet them again in the future, according to the Buddha. In one form or another, yeah. It's not over and done with that one lifetime. Anyone else? Okay. So maybe we can do our closing prayers. Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for the discussion. I just thought this was a good topic to talk about at the beginning of the year. We can't start with a completely clean slate, but we can start to erase things there. And it's our teachers say over and over again that we should be purifying like crazy. We're silly if we're not. Okay.
So we'll say the dedication from Shanti Deva. It's on the page of prayers in the white binder, and it's on page 246 in the gold prayer book. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. And then in the gold prayer book, flip to the previous page, and we'll do the short long life prayers. Starting with His Holiness, then Ken Rinpoche, and then Lama Zopa Rinpoche. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatari, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And now seven green Tara mantras for the long lives of our precious Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sangpo. Om Tari Tu Re Soha. Om Tari Tu 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 Tari Tu Re Soha.